Today's shiur in Maseches Bava Basra will be beginning from the Mishnah at the upper part of Daf Kuf Nun Zayin Omed Aleph. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the Shi'ur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. The Mishnah on Daf Kuf Nun Zayin Omed Aleph opens up with a geometric form. Geometric forms in our marking system, as you already heard in our introduction, represent a series of related ideas, similar ideas, different points that might be repetitive. In this case, we offer an introduction to what the geometric form is going to do. We do that often in our marked Gemaras. On the outside margin, you notice a Mivneh heading, and you see the bowtie form. This indicates that Sidra Shel Mishnayis, there is a series of Mishnayis that will be coming in the next couple of Dapim. We have a 1 over here, and the Mishnayis all open up with the case of Nofal Habayis, where a house caves in on its inhabitants. We've actually listed, before we even flip the pages in our marked Gemaras, for those of you who already own your marked Gemara, we've already indicated in the note that you have the case of Nofal Habayis with the double underline and with dots in it, which is one of our additional series markings. Who is it going to be falling on? So the first Mishnah, our Mishnah here, is Olav V'Al Oviv, on the central character in our story, and on his father, namely on a son and on his father. The house caves in and they die. The issue that will be preoccupying us in all of these Mishnayos is who dies first, so as to establish the line of inheritance. The next case will be, as is indicated by the note that we have in our Gemara text between the Gemara text and the Rashbam, you'll notice in the little space there's a 1 with a bowtie form, namely to the immediate right hand side of the Gemara, with an indication that the next one is on Kuf Nun Ches Omed Aleph. And we've indicated that also in our note in the outside margin, that Olav V'Al Ishto, case where a house caves in on a husband and on his wife. And the third case will be Olav V'Al Imo, as is indicated on Kuf Nun Ches Omid Beis. So those of you who have Gemaras available already, the marked edition, the Shas Ozer, so by flipping ahead you'll notice the series of Mishnayos that have the same theme to it. Let us proceed with learning the Mishnah inside now. Nofal Habayis Olav V'Al Oviv, a house caves in on a person and his father, O Olav V'Al Morishov, or on a person and those whose properties would be inherited by him. V'hoisa Olav, and on the central person in our case, in our Mishnah, the son, if you will, on this particular son, there is an obligation to pay Olav Ksubas Isha, the amount of money contained in his marriage agreement, that in the event that his wife becomes an almona, which in this case is what's happening, or if he happened to have divorced his wife. So he has a payment made to that woman, who baal choiv, and there's also a creditor that's trying to collect money from this particular person. It's very important to emphasize that the person who is the subject of our Mishnah, he has no outside funds with which to pay off these debts. The only funds that might be available would be those that he inherits from either his father or from the Morishav that are mentioned in this Mishnah. Outside of that, he has no money. So it is in their interest, the Isha or the Bachov, to establish that he, the one that owes them money, actually died second. In other words, that the father died first while his house was caving in. And if the father died first, then the son who owes all this money would have inherited his father, the father's possessions coming into his domain, and these people would thereby have a means of collecting their debts. However, if it happens the other way around, where the son dies first, him actually having no money, we mentioned that already, and his father dying second, so these people, the Ksubas Isha or the Baal Chov, would have no means of collection. Let's continue in the Mishnah. Yorshei Ho'av Oimrim, notice the squiggle underline under that expression, because on the next line we have a parallel expression, Ubalei Hachoiv Oimrim. The squiggle underline is one of our emphasis markings. In this case, you see the similarity between the two expressions, the two parties, the two sides, each one offering their own arguments. In this case, we open up with Yorshei Ho'av Omrim. The heirs of the father say that Haben Meis Rishoin V'achakach Meis Ho'av. And that being the case, these speakers will be able to inherit that particular Av. Ubalei Hachoiv Omrim, the creditors will claim the opposite. Ho'av Meis Rishon, it's in their interest, and that's what they're claiming, that the father died first, V'achakach Meis Haben, and then the son died, the son who owes us money, and if that be the case, then he'll have the wherewithal to pay off the debts. So we have these two parties arguing, the Yorshei Ha'av versus the Baalei Choiv. Beis Shammai Omrim Yachloiku. Beis Shammai says that we will resolve this doubt concerning money through division. They split the estate. Ubeis Hillel Omrim Nechosim Bechezkosan. The Rashbam points out, Ubeis Hillel Savri Nechosim Bechezkosan. Bechezkas Yorshei Ho'av. The property remains with them, with the heirs of that father. Shareihem Yorshim Vadai. They are definitely in the line of inheritance. Either O Miyakiv, either from this particular father, O Meruvain, or even if the son happened to inherit, they are in the line of inheritance, ukemuchzokim domu, and they're considered as if the property is in their possession. Shereyankiv muchzok b'nechosav hoya. The father was in possession of his property. The elu boim emikoychoi, and these parties, these people, the Yorsheav, are coming through him. Ubal choiv safek. The creditors are actually a matter of doubt. The Ein Sofek Motzi Midei Vadai, and doubt does not displace certainty. Before we continue in the Gemara, let us glance at our topic heading that we have on the outside margin, the Nosei. Loive, a borrower, Hameshaved Lamalve Nechosim, who allows his property to have a lien placed on them by the lender. In other words, the property owned by the loave, by the borrower, there is a lien on it that the malve has. So we have a borrower that was meshabi the malve nechosim. Which property is he placing a lien on? Properties she'osid liknois. Of course, properties that he already has have a lien on it by virtue of the fact that the borrower borrowed money. That creates a lien on his property. What do we say concerning property that he will get in the future, namely after the point of the loan? Haim hamalve yochol likvois mehem. Does the lender have a right to collect from properties that the borrower acquires after the date of the loan. Turning to the Gemara, Tanan Hosam. There is a Tanaic source that's found earlier in this Masechta, and it says, Hamalvez Chavero, one who loans money to his friend. And by the way, you see a frame around these lines that indicates that these lines of Gemara are actually a Tanaic source. So the source tells us that someone loaned money to his friend. Case A, Aleph, Bishtar, if the loan was done through a document, is the loan was recorded with witnesses signing it. Geve minichosim ishubadim, the malve, the lender, has a right to collect from properties that the borrower sold. Beis al yedei edim, if the loan is not recorded in a document but took place in front of witnesses. Geve minichosim ishubadim, the lender has a right to collect only from those properties that the borrower is in possession of at the time that the lender comes to collect. And of course we're talking specifically about properties, we're talking at least about properties that the borrower was in possession of at the time of the loan. This particular point comes to exclude the right of the lender to collect from sold properties. That's because in the Bay's case, the loan was not recorded in a document. Hence, purchasers who came to purchase from the borrower here were not on notice that this man owed money. As we continue in the Gemara, we encounter a new geometric form. Let us note what its role is by glancing at the outside margin, the Mivneh. Shnei Shlavim Bahavonas HaSheilo Hanal. We presented a question, and that was, does a lender have a right to collect properties that the borrower comes into possession of after the point of the loan? The house form that you see in the Gemara represents two stages in trying to understand the question. Continuing in the Gemara, Boi Shmuel, De'ikni v'kona mahu. De'ikni means properties that I will buy. The borrower says to the lender, I want to bind properties that I don't have yet, but that I will buy to this loan, to serve as a means of collection. Vikona, and then he buys those properties. Mahu, are they truly bound? The Gemara says that we know of two Tanaic opinions regarding sales of future items. A similar topic, but not directly our topic. This is called Odom Makne or Not Makne Dover Shelo Boli Olam. Can I, for example, sell to you fruit that will grow on a tree, even though the fruit is not around yet? Can I transfer to you something that's not around yet? According to Rabbi Meir, who's the first opinion that the Gemara presents, he says that I can transfer something to you that hasn't come about yet. If I can do that, if I can sell to you something that hasn't come about, doesn't exist anywhere in the world yet, the fruits are not around yet, it's in the middle of the winter season and summer fruits are just not around yet. So Rabbi Meir says I can sell such a thing. According to Rabbi Meir, therefore, if I can sell something that hasn't come to be in the world at all, I can certainly bind properties to you. The properties are around, they're simply not in my possession yet. That's less of a novel, less of an extreme idea. And therefore, the question that Shmuel is raising about de'ikni v'kona is not a question within Rebbe Meir, the conclusion would be obvious. Let's read this in the Gemara. Aliba de Rebbe Meir, according to Rebbe Meir, the Omar that said, Odom makne dover shelo boli olam, that a person can transfer ownership of something, can sell something that hasn't come to be yet, lo tiboy olach. That's not a question. In other words, let's go over the case once again. If I own trees and I anticipate that in a few months from now fruit will be growing on my trees, I can sell you the fruit that will grow on my trees. If that be the case, lo tiboy olach, the Gemara says, the question that Shmuel is presenting here is not a question. Devadai kona. The lender can certainly bind as obligation to pay off his debt fields that do exist right now that he simply hasn't bought yet. Bays, Ella, ki tiboy olach, the bays is put in here just to indicate stages of understanding this aspect of the question, according to whom are we asking our question. So the Gemara points out, Ella ki tiboy olach, aliba de Rabbonon, the question of Shmuel concerns the opinion of the Rabbonon, the Amri. They say, Ein odom makne dovor shelo boli olam, that a person cannot transfer the fruits, namely something that hasn't come to be in the world at all. Though I own the trees, the fruit hasn't come to be yet. I can't sell something that doesn't exist. Nevertheless, I want to know, according to the Rabbanan, though I can't sell something that doesn't exist, can I bind properties that I don't own yet? The point being, the properties do exist, they're simply not in my possession. Can I bind them to pay off this debt? Omar Rav Yosef Toshma. Rav Yosef says, come in here from the following Tanaic source. The following Tanaic source that's presented in the Gemara is actually presented in a very brief fashion. The background necessary for understanding this source is found in the Rashbam. Let us learn the Rashbam together and then be able to appreciate the attempted proof that Rav Yosef is trying to bring. The Rashbam is found under the Gemara, where the lines appear to get wider. Om Rav Yosef, Toshma, Desnan, Beperek Shnei, Dayoni Gezeres B'Ksubas. There's a Mishnah in that particular Perek of Maseches Ksubas. Hamotzi Shtarcho V'Chavero. Someone's trying to collect money from his friend. He produces a document saying, you owe me money. V'halo hotzi shtar. And the lender produces a document. Shekosuv bo, shemochar lo, es hasode. Malve lalove. A document that shows that the lender sold a field to the borrower. Achar shenichtav hashtar choiv shehu motzi olov. The sale document is dated after the original loan document. Admon Omer, Admon is the name of one of the Tanoim, and he says, Yochol haloive liton, the borrower can claim the following. Basically, I don't owe you any money. Ilu chayev hoyisi loch, had I owed you money, hoya loch lifroya es shelcha mimeni, you should have collected the money as payment for the debt that I supposedly owed you, v'lohoya l'cho limkor li karka b'shvil sorech mos, and you should not have sold to me land because of your need for money. If you needed money and I really owed you the money, then why in the world did you sell the property to me? You should have simply collected the debt. The fact that you sold the property to me shows clearly that I didn't owe you I didn't owe you money anymore. V'chachomim omrim ze hamalve, the Rashbam continues and says that this particular malve who is claiming that the money is still owed to him, this particular malve, hamalve hoyo pikeach shemochalo lalove zakarka. This malva, this lender, was smart in his sale of the land to the love. He got money for the land sale, and as a result of that, as a result of the Lova now being in possession of the land, Shehu Yochel Ato Lemashkenoi Be'at Chovo, he can now seize upon that land as payment for his debt. V'lo Yochel Lidchoisoi V'loimar Ein Li Lefroaklum. And the borrower, after he buys this land from the lender, won't be able to claim any further that I don't have the means to pay the debt off. Now, we are going to focus on the Rashbam, because at this point it becomes relevant to our discussion. We have a lender who, according to what we just said, is able to seize land from the borrower, land that the borrower acquired after the initial loan was extended. V'hinei zeh hakarka de'ikni havei. This is future acquisition with regard to the original loan. She'la'achar shenichtav hashtar chov kono halove zman merubo. After the original loan document was prepared, this particular borrower only then acquired this land, a long time after the original loan document was produced. V'hinei ze hamalve chozer v'goyve choyvoy v'choyvo. And we see that the lender is able to seize upon that property. Amo, from here we conclude, de'ikni v'koni mishtabed l'malve, that the offer of binding future acquisitions to a loan is effective. Let's continue in the Gemara. So Rav Yosef at this point would have attempted to show us a resolution to the question. Omar Le, Rava. Rava responds, this resolution is not impressive. In other words, our question was even greater than was just presented, as the Gemara will explain shortly. Rava says, Mine ka'omar. If you're talking about a collection from the loiva himself, where a lender is coming to collect from the borrower himself, there are no bounds to what the lender can collect. It's obvious he can collect future acquisitions. Mine afilu miglimo di al kaspe. The lender has a right to collect the shirt off his back. In other words, our question was never as we originally presented it, whereby we were interested in knowing whether a borrower can bind future acquired land to pay off a debt to the lender when the lender comes knocking on the borrower's door for payment. It is obvious to us that the lender can collect whatever the borrower is in possession of at the time he comes to collect. What was that? What is the question then? Ki kol mi bayi lon, what we're really asking about, and you can see another house form, and we've indicated this is stage two. De'ikni kono u'mochar. De'ikni kono v'hoirish mai. The question is, what about binding future acquired lands that when they are acquired by the borrower doesn't keep them in his own possession, but rather he sells them or bequeaths them to someone else? Can our lender turn to the purchasers and collect those lands? So, as we can see here, we've introduced a third party, an additional stage to the issue of collecting. In order to answer this, we continue and encounter a new geometric form, the triangle. As has been noted in our introduction, there is no inherent significance to any one given geometric form. They all have the same role, and that's to produce a series idea. In this case, the triangles will be attempts to resolve the issue of the ikni kona umochar, and to say, we will be trying to say, that this too binds. if the lender says, I want to bind my future acquisitions to this loan, the properties will be bound even in the event that they're sold or bequeathed to someone else. The Gemara, however, as each stage arises, will reject these attempts. Let us just glance ahead with the markings that we've made available in our pre-marked Gemara Shas Ozer edition. And you can see, you have number one over here. As you flip over the page, or if you have the option of scrolling ahead on your screen, you'll notice toward the upper part of the page, number two, a second triangle, which will try to resolve that ikni kono umochar works. And a third triangle appears a little further down on Amud Beis. In addition to the triangles, which present the initial attempt to resolve the question, after the sources that will accompany these particular attempts, we've also dot underlined an expression that appears each time, and the expression is v'i salka daitoch. You notice where the dots are. It says that i salka daitoch diikni kono mocha ikono mersh loy mishtabed. As if you were to think that it doesn't work, then we will encounter a difficulty. Hence, the thrust of these attempted conclusions to show that ikni kona umochar is effective. However, each time the Gemara tries to present these as a resolution, we're going to notice, but this time you'll only see it on Amud Beis, you'll notice a double underline which emphasizes the expression ha money Rabbi Meir he, that each one of these proofs are really within the opinion of Rabbi Meir, who is an advocate of the effectiveness of binding future acquisitions and future liens, etc. He is the opinion that we saw before that said Adam makne dover shelo bali olam. But our question is not within Rabbi Meir, our question is within the Rabbanan. Nevertheless, even before we read the Gemara, you can, by navigating with the simunim, with the symbols, you can see the Gemara presents three attempts. At the end of each attempt, the Gemara will be saying that it's most likely that ikni kono umochar, the acquisition of the future acquisitions and subsequent sales, are still bound to the original loan. And after that, each time the Gemara, as you can see where the double underlining appears, each time the Gemara will reject these answers and say that these sources are taught only according to Rabbi Meir. Let us proceed. The question was raised, binding properties to pay off a loan that when acquired by the borrower and then turned over in a sale to a third party, can our lender knock on the door of the third party and say, hey, the land you bought is bound to my earlier loan? Omar Rav Chona, Ta Shma, we quote from our Mishnah, Nofal Habayis, Olov V'al Oviv, Olov V'al Morishov, the house fell upon a son and a father. And the son had debts. He had a ksubas isha debt to pay off, or a creditor to pay off. Yor shehoav oimrim haben meis rishon v'achakach meis hoav. The heirs of the father claim that the son died first, and hence he never inherited the property of our relative. And only v'achakach meis hoav, the father then died, and we inherit those properties. And the debt collectors are claiming Ho'av Meis Rishon, first the father died, and then the son, and the son who owed us money will have now the means of paying off the debt by our collecting the estate that he just inherited and is being transferred to us. Let us take careful note here. These creditors are seizing upon which properties? Properties that were not in possession of the fellow that owed them the money, namely the Ben, at the time the initial loan was extended. and yet they're seemingly able to place a claim on it. That would show that the ikni kona umochar, or ikni kona vahirish, would be an effective means of binding. The e salka daitoch the ikni kona umochar the ikni kona vahirish loy mishtabed. If you were to think that one could not bind future acquisitions, nihi nami da'av mis berisha, even if the father died first and the properties fell into possession of this son, de ikni hu, it's still a matter of a future acquisition with regard to the original loan, the original debt that was incurred. At the point the debt was incurred, these properties were not in the possession of that son. So how can these creditors come to collect? Omar Luhu Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman responds. He says, this isn't going to help us. Zeira Chavrin Tirgema, Zeira, our colleague, explained, Mitzvah al hayesoimim lifroya choivas avihen. The obligation rests upon the survivors. We have a son here that owed money. Upon his death, the property would have transferred to his children. And these creditors are trying to collect the debt that was owed to them by turning to the children of the one that owed them the money. And as such, there's another rule that takes over. Mitzvah al hayesoimim lefroya choivas avihen. There is a mitzvah, an obligation on the part of the yesoimim, the children, to pay off their father's debt. And the Rashbam explains the Balei Chov in this particular Mishnah are turning to the children of the one that owed them money, are placing their claim, and their claim is based on this, their ability to place their claim is based on this, and not because their father ever wrote an obligation to pay them through future acquisitions. And we're now going to emphasize this point again. Namely, even if their father, who borrowed the money, never wrote to the lenders the ikni, future acquisitions I want to bind to you, even if it wasn't written, the children would still be duty bound to pay their father's debt. On this particular point, the Gemara raises a question. Maskif lo Rav Ashi. If that be the case, if you're going to tell me that the hischivus, that the obligation here comes from mitzvah lefroya choiva vihem, but not because it was ever written, then another rule kicks in. Milve al pehu. Then it becomes a matter of an oral obligation. The Rav Shmuel Dami Travayu milve al peh eino goive lo min hayorshim velo min halukuchos. Oral obligations cannot be collected from heirs nor from purchasers. So these Balei Chov would not be able to turn to the children of the one that owed them money and place a claim, because the status of the children's obligation to pay off the debt would have been a status categorized as milveh al peh, and as such, they are not obligated to pay off these debts. A milveh al peh, the creditors here, their whole claim against the children of the one that owed them money would be, as we just said, a type of oral obligation, and as such, they cannot collect from the yorshim. If that be the case, so then how in the world can our source possibly feature a claim on the part of the lenders turning to the children of the one that owed them money and try to collect? How can they even try to collect? Ella ha money, Rebbe Meir he. The source that said that the Balei Chov claimed that the father died first and then his son died and we want the money, this is taught according to Rebbe Meir. And Rebbe Meir, who said the Omar, Odom makne dovor shelo bali oilom, that a person can sell something that hasn't come to be yet. However, our original question was, according to the Rabbonan, that hold, Ein Odom Makne Dovor Shelo Bo Li'olam, a person can't sell that which hasn't come to be yet, can he nevertheless bind to pay off a loan properties that he has not yet acquired? Properties that, albeit, are in the world, but he himself hasn't acquired yet. So we continue in searching for an answer. Omar Rav Yankiv Minahar Pekoyid Mishmei de Ravino. Toshma, the second attempt. Shtorei Choiv Hamukdomim Psulin. Documents that indicate a loan was taken, but have a predated, but are predated. In other words, if a loan took place in the middle of the month, and a date on this document indicates that the loan took place at the beginning of the month, that is posel. It's void. It's not acceptable. V'hamu'uchorin ksherim. However, post-dated loan documents are kosher. In other words, if a loan took place at the beginning of the month, and the date that's written in to this document says that the loan took place in the middle of the month, such a loan document is acceptable. The reason behind these two particular points is that if you have a loan document that's predated, in other words, a loan took place in the middle of the month, but the date that appears is from the beginning of the month, the lender would be able to take this document and go to people that purchased land from the borrower before the actual loan took place, and yet the lender would claim that the properties they bought have a lien on them by producing this document with a date that's earlier than their purchase, when in fact there's no lien on it because they purchased the property from the borrower before he ever borrowed money. So as to protect purchasers, people who buy land from the borrower, we render predated documents as being void. However, when you're dealing with a shtar mu'uchar, where a loan took place at the beginning of the month, or if we use the common example that you find in the Gemaras, and we find it here in the Rashbam, if a loan took place in the month of Nisan, which is considered the beginning of the month, the calendar year with regard to months, and the date that's written into the document is Tishrei, a half a year later, this is okay. And the reason for that is that people who bought land before Tishrei, namely, they bought land from the borrower after the loan actually took place. Technically speaking, people who bought land from this man between Nisan and Tishrei are really duty-bound. There's a lien on those. However, the lender won't be able to collect from them because the date in the document is later than their purchase, than those lekuchos, the people that purchased from the borrower. So the malvus is actually forfeiting, so to speak, a half year worth of purchasers. So that's fine. However, as far as our sugya is concerned, there's more to see. You're telling me that a post-dated loan document is okay. Let us take a look in the Rashbam. Mu'uchorin amai k'sherim. Rashbam is in the narrow lines, a little further down the midway point. He says, k'shelova b'nisan v'nichtav b'tishrei, when a loan took place in Nisan, and the date was written only a half year later, v'halo shema kono ze haloive elu nechosim bein Nisan l'tishrei, could it not be that the borrower acquired properties between Nisan and Tishrei? Once again, the initial loan took place in Nisan. He buys properties after that. V'lo ishtabdu l'malveh, and they don't become bound to the malveh, to the lender, the iknihu b'shas havoh. Their future acquisitions with regard to the actual time of the loan, which was in Nisan, v'hatoref yovo litrof mitishrei ve'elech shelo kedin, the lender will come and collect from the purchasers from Tishrei onwards, min halukuchos shekonu min haloive nechosim haknuyim loi minisan v'atishrei. When our lender comes to collect after Tishrei, the date that is in his document indicates that the loan was a Tishrei loan, he has a right to turn to people that bought land from the borrower. They bought land. When did they buy the land from the borrower? They bought land from the borrower after Tishrei. Fine. But what land was being sold by the borrower to the purchasers? Land that he, the borrower, acquired after Nisan. Land that he acquired after Nisan is land that in fact he did not have at the time the loan actually took place. The loan actually took place in Nisan. He bought land between Nisan and Tishrei. He sold that land after Tishrei, and the borrower, the lender, is coming to collect from those purchasers, albeit after Tishrei, but what land? Land that the borrower acquired after the initial loan was extended. And we're saying that that's okay. Let us continue in the Gemara. If that were the case, that land that was purchased by the borrower after the initial loan would not be bound, then the post-dated documents, which we said are acceptable, why should they be acceptable? De'iknihu. You encounter a situation of the lender seizing upon the lekuchos, seizing upon the purchasers, those who bought land from the borrower, land which the borrower acquired only after the initial loan took place. And we're saying that's okay. So we see from here that de'ikni kona u'mochar is mishabed. The Gemara rejects this once again. Ha money, Rabbi Meir he. The source that gave us the feeling that it becomes mishubad, that the alin is formed on it, is according to Rabbi Meir d'Amar, odo makne dover shelo bali olam. That's the opinion that said a person can even sell things that are not in the world at all. However, our question was within the Rabbanan, who disagree with Rabbi Meir. Amrav misharshia mishmei derova toshma. So we come up to the third attempt to answer our question. This source is a source that is part of a larger source, and we're quoting it a bit out of context, but we're going to try to extract from it a point that is relevant to us. Lishvach karkois ketzad. Shvach karkois has to do with improvements that were made on a piece of land. Ketzad, what's the case? And we're going to allow the Gemara to explain itself. Hare shemochar soda lechavero. Imagine, a person sold a piece of land to his friend. Vehishbicha, the purchaser, the lokeach, improved the land. Obo ba'al choiv v'torfa. And the seller's creditor, the one who sold the land in our story, had actually borrowed money from someone else. So that creditor came to the lokeach, came to the fellow that purchased the land. V'torfan collected the land, saying, how could you buy land from this man that owed me money earlier? Hence, the land is really coming to me. So we have a land purchaser that just got wiped out. Kishahu goive, when the purchaser comes for compensation, goive es hakeren minechose mishuabodim. He can go to collect the principal value of the land. In other words, the purchase price that he paid to the one that sold him. He can go to any land that the mocher, who's also the borrower, any land that he sold subsequent to this particular purchase. Those are the nechosim mishuabodim. Ves ha-shevach minechosim b'nei chorin. The lokeach, who lost everything to the original lender, when he wants to collect the improvements that he, the purchaser, made in the land, he can collect those improvements from property currently held by the fellow who sold him the property, the mocher, but he cannot collect the shevach from future, from other people, from people that bought afterwards. Let us focus on this shevach, on this land improvement. The isalka daitoch, if it were so, the ikni kona umochar. The ikni kona vahirish lo mishtabe. If it were so that future acquired properties are not bound, baal choiv amai goive shvacha. When this, in our story, when the original lender loaned money to the borrower, there was no shevach karkois around. The shevach was produced much later. It was produced by the lokeach, that the fellow who bought from the borrower. And yet we see in this story that the lender, the original lender, was able to collect from the lokeach not only the principal but the improvements as well. Let us glance at the Rashbam. You'll notice there's an asterisk to ease finding it in the lower part of the page. Baal Choyv Shevach Mino Le, Valo Zeha Shevach, the improvement featured in our case, Halokeach Shelokach Sodazu Achar Havos Amav Ishbicho, the purchaser that bought the land after the initial loan created the improvements, and yet the original lender was able to collect it. Udeikni Karino Be Bishas Hava. As far as the initial loan is concerned, these improvements were of a future nature. The Gemara says this is not conclusive. Ha money, Rabbi Meir Higiomar, Odo Makne Dober Shalobo Olam. This source refers to Shitas Rabbi Meir, who said a person can sell that which doesn't exist. However, our question was within the Rabbonon, and it remains unresolved. We featured a semicolon at the end of the line indicating that we're at a pause in our train of thought, and the Gemara goes on with what we call an inyan ba'api nafsha. It's quite related, though, but it's not a continuation in terms of the train of thought. As far as the train of thought is concerned, we're leaving off at the point that our original question of the ikni kono mochar, according to the Rabbonin, does that create a lien or not? Unresolved. In Timtzilomar, if you take the position to ikni kono mochar, the ikni kono vahirish lo mishtabe, ha lo mishtabe. If you say that it does not create a lien, so be it. So no lien is created, and lenders would not be able to seize upon a land acquired by the borrower after the point of a loan and subsequently sold to others. However, im tim salomar mishtabe, if you say that a lien is created, then I have a question. Lava, velava, vechozar, vekona, mahu. A person borrowed money from Mr. One. The same person borrowed money from Mr. Two. So we have a loiva who's chayef to two people, a borrower who's chayef to two lenders. This borrower then bought land. To whom is he duty bound? Mahu. Lekamo mishtabed or lebasro mishtabed? Is he bound to the first lender or to the second? Omar Rav Nachman, ho milso ibayalon. This question came up to us. We were bothered by it. V'sholchu mitam rishon kona. You notice that we have a geometric form which takes a different position as you go on in the Gemara. This is simply to make it easier to see that there's an argument, and since there's a series of opinions here, easy to see who holds what. Before we go further in the Gemara, let us take advantage of our topic heading that will serve at times, and as in this case, as a review as well. The nosei, im timtzilomar de'ikni mishtabe, if you say that future acquisitions can be bound, mahadin b'shnayim shenoishim be'echad, what will the halacha be with regard to two who are pressing a claim on one? Bozeh achar zeh. V'achar kach kono haloive nechosim. After the two loans were taken from two different people, the borrower who took loans from these two different people bought property. Ha'im mishtabed l'rishon? Is this property bound to the first lender? Oy yachloku, or do they split? Klomar. Ha'im zeh shekodam b'halva kodim lizkos b'nechosim? Do we say that the first one to extend the loan gets first rights as far as collections are concerned? Oy, me'achar she'haloive rochash hakarkois Achri Shekvar Lova Min Hasheni, or do we say that since the acquisition of the properties on the part of the borrower took place after he was already bound to the two loans, the second one as well, Ein Kedima, there's no priority. No one takes precedence. Ushnei Hanoishim Yeshlem Tviois Shavois, and as a result of that, both lenders would have equal claim. So we already saw in the Gemara the first opinion, the narrow form of this volcano marking facing upwards. We said that represents Rishoin Kona. The first lender has the rights to the property. Rav Huna Omar Yachloku, split. The two lenders will split that property. The Chein Toni Rabo Baravua, the form takes the same position as by Rav Huna because Rabo Baravua says the same thing, Yachloku. Omar Ravina Madura Kamo de Ravashi, the first version of Ravashi, Omar Lon Rishoin Kona, that the first lender has the rights to collect. Madura Basra de Ravashi, the second version of Ravashi, Omar Lon, he taught us Yachloku. Vehilchisa Yachloku. And the halacha, the Gemara rules, is they split. Meisvei. Gemara raises a question from a source that we saw very recently. This question will be raised against the opinion that said Yachloku, that was also the conclusion of the Gemara. We have the following source, Meisvei, L'shvach Karkois Ketzav. We saw this just above, the case of land improvements. What is the halacha regarding collection of the shevach? Hare shemochar soda lechavero. We have a borrower that sold field to someone else. Vishbichan, the purchaser, improved it. Ubo balchoi v'torfa, and the original lender, the one who loaned money to the fellow that just sold the land, he came to collect the land with its improvements. Kishahu goive, when the purchaser comes to collect compensation, goive esaker minuchosim mishubodim, he collects his principal from lands that were sold by the mocher, who's the borrower, subsequent to his particular purchase. The es hashevach minechosim b'necherin, and the improvements the lokeach is able to collect only from property held by the seller himself. With regard to the shevach is something that was produced at what point in time? Late in time, not only after the original loan was extended, but after the purchase was extended too. How many people are placing claim on this shevach? We have the fellow who created the shevach, the lokeach, and we have the original malve who also is seizing upon it for payment for the original debt. Now, the Im Esau, if it were so that if you have two creditors and a subsequent acquisition, and we ruled that it is split between the two creditors, so why is it that the original lender in this particular Tanaic source collects all of the Shevach? Chatzi Shevach Miboyalei. He should have been collecting half of the Shevach. The Gemara says, "My goive nami dekotoni." The word goive that was used in the source that says he comes to collect compensation for his Shevach. My goive nami dekotoni, chatzi Shevach. Let us glance in the Rashbam, Ve'im Isa, Chatzi Shevach mi boyale, Shekevon Shemochar Haloive Sodehu, Ve'kosav lo Achrayas Olof, since the borrower sold the land and wrote a guarantee over it, Ve'acharei Kein Hishbichon Halokeach, and afterwards the purchaser created these improvements, Nimsa Hamalve Ve'halokeach Shneam Noishim Baloive. It turns out that the original lender and the purchaser are placing a claim on the borrower. Ve'nimsa Hashevach Konui Laloive Achar Shibud Shnehem. It turns out that the improvements that were made in the property that the borrower sold appeared after both the purchaser and the original lender had a claim against him. La malveh bechayvai ulalokeach bekesef miknaso. The malveh was seizing upon it for purposes of collecting his original debt, and the purchaser had a lien against the one that sold him the land to collect his purchase payment. Therefore, the original lender should have no claim more than half of the improvements. And in fact, that's what the Gemara answered, that the original borrower could not collect any more than half the Shevach because the Lokeach also had a claim against it. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.